Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning. This hour of the program, the president's proposed cuts to Social Security benefits. There are many who are opposing this plan, and there are some who are sticking by the president's side, saying that the cuts are not too bad, and that any budget compromise with the Republican House will involve going more than halfway. The way this would happen is that the benefits would be changed, and it's the way that inflation is calculated, so increases in future monthly Social Security payments would grow more slowly. We have two guests with us this hour to talk about these proposals, and I would imagine that we're going to have more than a few phone calls on this issue. Our guests will include the first half hour, Peter Van De Water, who is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, where he specializes in Medicare, Social Security, and health care coverages. And later in the hour, former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, Robert Reich, will be joining us. All hour, you are welcome to join this conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave messages there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Peter Van De Water is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. As I said, he specializes in Medicare, Social Security, and health care coverage issues. Previously, he was vice president for health policy at the National Academy of Social Insurance, and he served as assistant deputy commissioner for policy at the Social Security Administration. Peter, thank you very much for joining us. Hello.
Good to be here, Kathleen.
Is it necessary, some are asking, for there to be any cuts in Social Security? Is it important to do that, to save the program, or not?
Well, cuts in Social Security are hardly essential. In fact, if I had my druthers, I'd prefer to focus on strengthening Social Security through raising the tax support for the program, particularly through raising the level of earnings subject to the Social Security tax. But quite frankly, I think in the current political environment, in any conceivable political environment, some cuts in Social Security are going to be part of a solvency package no matter what. So I think it's not that they're desirable, but that I think they're likely.
And does it do anything to help with our deficit problem?
Yes, indeed it does. Although Social Security obviously has been running surpluses for the past 30 years and is continuing to do so for the time being, Social Security is part of the federal budget, and anything that reduces Social Security spending will help to reduce our deficits.
Can you explain to me how it is that these changes would be made? It changes the way inflation is calculated. How so?
Yes, the current consumer price index, or any price index, represents the average increase in prices from one month to the next for what we call a market basket of commodities purchased by a typical consumer. The U.S. Department of Labor, which produces our consumer price index, updates that market basket every 2 years or so through a new survey of consumer spending. The updating of the market basket reflects new products that come online and older products that people stop buying and other changes that people make in their purchasing patterns. The chain CPI, which is the alternative index which is proposed to be used, essentially updates the market basket on a continuing basis, on a month-to-month basis. The effect of that is that the more frequent updating results in an inflation measure that goes up a little bit less rapidly, by about 0.25% each year.
There are some who are concerned, and we've all seen pensions in some cases go away, that more and more people will be retiring more and more on their Social Security benefits. Is that true? Are we, because pensions aren't with us as they used to be, that it's more important?
Yes, indeed. That's exactly right, that the traditional defined benefit pension plan is on the wane. The number of full-time workers covered by defined benefit pension plans has shrunk substantially over the past 30 years. So again, by itself, that's a reason to protect and strengthen Social Security benefits, not to cut them.
Mm-hmm. There have, and I believe you or your organization is one of them, that have argued that the chain CPI is acceptable, but only if there are exceptions for the most vulnerable. Is that an accurate statement? And what kinds of safeguards need to be put in place for the most vulnerable?
Yes, that's exactly right. As you can tell, my enthusiasm for the chained CPI proposal is limited. There are a lot of cons, but we think that the proposal is worth considering if a few conditions are met. First of all, that it be part of an overall balanced deficit reduction package that would include a substantial amount of additional revenues as well as spending cuts. And secondly, as you said, that the proposal be combined with protections that would help the poorest of the poor as well as the oldest Social Security beneficiaries who would otherwise bear a disproportionate burden from the proposal. And we think that the proposals for protecting low-income and older beneficiaries that are in the president's budget are pretty reasonable.
There have been some who have criticized the president, many actually, who have been criticizing him for even putting this proposal out there, because the chances are that he's going to get more taxes from the wealthy among us are not very great. So why would you even put this on the table?
That's a good question. I and many of my colleagues had actually wished that the president had not included it in the budget at this point. But on the other hand, it is a proposal that Republicans have been pushing for. In fact, back in just after Thanksgiving, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the U.S. Senate, specifically identified the chain CPI as one of the proposals that he thought was an important change that would have to be part of a bipartisan deficit reduction agreement. And it was after that that President Obama had included the chain CPI proposal as a compromise element in his proposal to House Speaker Boehner back in the middle of December. So it's important to remember that this, was not a proposal that the president would have supported on his own, that he was responding to suggestions from McConnell and Boehner, and that it was already on the table, so that whether it was in the budget or not is in a sense not an absolutely critical issue.
Mm-hmm. And how would you characterize the opposition to this? There were last week a number of progressive organizations who had a gathering on the Hill and talked about not balancing the budget on the backs of the elderly, disabled vets. Last year, 107 House Democrats signed a letter saying that Social Security has not contributed to our current fiscal problems and should not be on the bargaining table. Is this creating a real uproar among some Democrats that could be problematic for midterm elections, do you think?
Well, it certainly has created a lot of opposition on the Democratic side, and I would say, of course, among some Republicans as well, although a lot of Republicans have been pushing for this proposal, as I said, not all of them have been doing so. So yes, I think it quite likely could become a significant issue in the 2014 elections, although how it plays out is too early to say. If the president succeeds in getting a large deficit reduction agreement, it may come to appear as an effective move. If it proves unsuccessful, it might be the opposite.
Where are we now in terms of income that is subject to Social Security? It's $101,000?
Oh, it's a bit over $110,000 of earnings per year are currently subject to the Social Security tax.
And where do you think that should be?
I think we could go up to a number, $220,000 or so. The $220,000 number would put the earnings cap back at a level where it that where 90% of earnings in the economy are subject to the Social Security tax, and that's where and that's the level that applied back in the early 1980s when the when the current level and the indexing mechanisms were put in place. The amount of earnings subject to the tax has slipped in proportionately because of the growing inequality of earnings in the economy. So even though the earnings limit has been increased by the average increase in wages, we've had a disproportionate share of earnings accruing to those at the very, very top of the income distribution and a growing portion of those very high earnings are now not being subject to Social Security tax.
Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be on the table just considering today's political climate?
Oh, I think that that certainly needs to be on the table, although I think it's unlikely that it would be part of a any deficit reduction agreement reached this year.
We welcome phone calls. We're talking about Social Security this hour of the program and the president deciding to put a change in Social Security on the table here and a lot of opposition to that. What are your thoughts about this? Those of you, and it's all just about everybody, some of you may be on Social Security, those who are soon to be on Social Security or in the somewhat distant future, this would be a change in the way inflation is calculated, so benefits really would be growing more slowly. Was it a good thing for the president to do to show that he was, as he has said, going more than halfway to deal with the budget deficit, or is he being rightly criticized? And are you so mad about this that you would like to have some Democrats run on this issue, challenging Democrats in the midterm elections? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to use that to leave messages, is is the Kathleen Dunn Show. So all of those ways to communicate with us are available to you. Our guest will have two of them, actually, this hour. Peter Vandewater, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He specializes in Medicare, Social Security, and health care coverage. Later this hour, former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich will be joining us, and he is very much opposed to what the president is doing. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, and let's start with Ellen in Milwaukee. Hello, Ellen.
Hello there. I just want to know if Social Security is currently not, and maybe it will someday in the future, driving the deficit. In fact, the government has robbed the trust fund, and it seems to me that the Republicans don't want to pay back that over $2 trillion that is owed to the beneficiaries of Social Security because they paid it in. Why are we talking about Social Security at this time?
Paul.
Well, 2 points. First of all, I think that it's not correct that the Social Security Trust Fund has been in any sense robbed or raided. The money that's been paid in over the years in payroll taxes that have exceeded the money going out in benefits, that's there and it's available to be used in future years as it becomes necessary. It's invested in U.S. government securities, which I know some of which I hold in my personal portfolio and I think all of us regard as among the safest assets in the world. So I don't think that's a concern. As to the other point of the question, though, as to why, why should we talk about cutting Social Security in the current context? As I said, Social Security is a part of the overall federal budget, and even if it's not currently contributing to the deficit, slowing the growth of Social Security benefits would reduce federal spending and hold down the overall federal deficit in the long run. Now, that's not to say whether it's a proposal that one should ultimately support or not, but just as a factual matter, if this proposal were enacted, it would reduce the federal deficit.
Why do we keep hearing, that's a refrain you hear again and again, that Social Security's funds have been robbed?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer that, but I think to some extent it's an argument that comes up on both sides of the political spectrum. People who are not supporters of Social Security sometimes like to say that the assets in the trust funds aren't real, that they're quote just IOUs unquote. Well, of course, almost every financial asset in the economy is essentially an IOU. It's the promise of someone to pay, one person, one entity to pay someone else. So calling an asset an IOU is hardly a criticism. But I think that those attacks on Social Security have led some people to reach the wrong conclusion that somehow the money in the trust funds really isn't there. And that's definitely the wrong conclusion.
Let's go to Jean in Eau Claire next. Hello, Jean.
Good morning. I have some big concerns about this. I usually support President Obama, but this one I definitely feel is a kind of a slap in the face to those who have supported him. Many elderly citizens that I know of can barely make it right now, and some use their credit cards just to buy groceries because everybody pays in out of their Social Security check, or most people do, for Medicare coverage, your basic, maybe 100 or more a month for coverage to have Medicare. Then on top of that, they buy an insurance that Medicare don't pay for a lot of things. And then on top of that, the prescription drug costs have skyrocketed, and they get into the donut hole faster, and the donut hole fix was not that, helped that much. And then another issue is the cost of fuel oil, and fuel assistance has gone down significantly. I know a lot of seniors and disabled who are suffering immensely.
Paul.
The concern that you lay out, ma'am, is a very real one. And I don't want to minimize the negative effects that this proposal would have for some senior citizens, just as you describe. Even though the effect would be relatively small at first, as I said, about a quarter of a percent reduction in benefits the first year for someone who's in has a tight budget, even a small amount like that can be very significant. So the question is, is this an area on which the president should have considered compromising with the Republicans or not? I mean, all I'd point out is that the president has stood firm on opposing some of the other proposals for cuts the Republicans have made. For example, another proposal by Senate Minority Leader McConnell was to raise the age of eligibility for Medicare. The administration has come out very strongly against that, and that's one on which I happen to agree with them very much. But I understand your concern about this particular proposal for the change CPI.
Thanks very much for the call, Gene. Tom in Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I just basically have a comment, and that is I'm very disappointed with our president. I feel like he's misled us not just on this issue but on many issues in the past. And I guess my suggestion would be, I think, Kathleen, you probably had Bernie Sanders on. I don't always get a chance to listen to your program. I wish I could. but Bernie can explain it much better than I can. And perhaps you can, if you have an Adam on, maybe you can get him on or get him on again just to go over this change CPI, because after listening to what Bernie has said and when reading what Bernie has said, this is just a bad idea. And for our president to even put this out there is a slap in the face to all those people who supported him on two elections. That's all I have to say.
All right, thank you. Bernie has been on. He's hard to book, but we can try and get him on again. Paul?
I have concerns about the proposal myself. I think that it's, although I think the president's staff has designed, as I said, the proposal in a way to make it as, to minimize the harm that it would otherwise produce. So I think that it's something which can be supported, although not with great enthusiasm.
Paul, if increases in revenue, and that would be in the form of taxes on those who have more money going up, doesn't appear to be on the table when it comes to Republican negotiations, it would appear to me that all of this isn't going anywhere, is it?
It looks like things aren't going to go anywhere in the next in the next few weeks or the next month. But we do have to remember that we're facing another, the federal government is again approaching the debt ceiling, the limit on the amount of federal borrowing. And it is going to be necessary to, for Congress to raise the debt ceiling sometime this summer. And so the administration and the Congress are going to be back in close negotiations over the budget. And it's quite possible that, this proposal will be seriously considered at that point. So I think it's too early to say that none of this is going anywhere.
Okay. Let's go to Jack next in Nina. Hi, Jack.
Hi. The thing is here is that Obama is going to raise cost of living raise, which will offset any kind of decrease in Social Security for people. This is what people don't understand right now. This is what people want to have to know about Obama. I am totally behind what he's doing.
Paul.
I guess I didn't quite catch the first part of that comment, so I can't comment on it.
The Social Security raises are going to be raised because Obama is going to raise the cost of living raise.
Well, no, actually, the current proposal would reduce the amount of the cost of living increase slightly, not increase it.
And how slight is that? I don't think we've outlined that.
Yeah, as I say, it accumulates. It's a difference of about a quarter of a percentage point a year since the average benefit is about $15,000 a year. That's only $35-$40 in the first year for the average beneficiary, but it would grow in succeeding years.
Thanks, Jack, for your call. Michael in Milwaukee is next, and we have lines open if you've been trying to get through, everybody. It's 800-486-8655. Send an email at talk@wpr.org. Hi, Michael.
Morning.
Morning.
Anyways, I haven't heard any talk about the Social Security Disability Program. I just wonder, does that money come out of the general Social Security Fund? And if it does, that seems like it's a real drain on the system. Social Security wasn't in the beginning intended for that. It was intended, from what I understand, as a retirement program. And from what I also have heard, there seems to be a lot of corruption and I don't know what you would call in this disability program. A lot of people are collecting that never paid into the program. You know, if that money came out of a different fund, Social Security would be in a lot better shape.
Oh, that's a great question to ask about disability. I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding there. First of all, Social Security disability insurance is a contributory program. People get benefits only if they've paid in Social Security taxes. A portion of the Social Security taxes that you and everyone else pays are specifically dedicated to the disability insurance portion of the program. Now, as you say, when Social Security was first set up back in the 1930s, there wasn't a disability component, but that was added back in the 1950s, back under President Eisenhower. So it's still hardly a novel feature of the program. It was essentially conceived back in the 50s as, in effect, providing early retirement for people who had severe impairments and were no longer able to continue working through the normal retirement age. The age cutoff was lowered back in the 1960s. So again, this program in its current form has been around for for 50 years in round or more in round numbers. The Inspector General's Office in Social Security monitors the program very thoroughly, and while they do, they obviously find, as with any human endeavor, there are some cases of fraud. The number of cases that they find that are, that they can actually prosecute turn out to be very, very small, so that the allegations of this program being rife with fraud and waste are just not correct. The people who are getting benefits have serious impairments and generally have very limited education and job skills. They're older people who have largely worn out over the years and are not capable of working. So I think it's a very important part of the system, and I'm glad you asked about it.
Thank you very much, Michael, for the call. I'm interested in the history here, if you know it, Paul. Was there a vigorous debate or any debate at all about an income cap back when this whole Social Security program was designed?
Certainly, it was discussed, and I think there's a sound reason for having a limit on what the amount of earnings subject to the tax. Your Social Security benefit is an earned benefit. You receive the benefit because you've paid in payroll taxes during your working lifetime. And the amount of the benefit you get back depends upon the amount of earnings on which you've paid taxes. The formula is progressive. That means that a high-wage worker receives more in benefits than a low-wage worker, but the high-wage worker doesn't receives proportionately less. Put another way, the low-wage worker gets a larger payback in relative terms on his or her contribution. And it's good. So the reason to have a cap is that if you didn't, you'd have the Bill Gateses and the Warren Buffetts of the world paying Social Security taxes on huge earnings and potentially getting benefits as well based on those huge earnings, and that just wouldn't make any sense. So there's a sound reason for having a limit on the earnings subject to tax, but I think it should be a higher limit than where it now is.
Let's go to Chris, Highway 43. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question and a comment. The question is, part of the sequester, we finally got rid of the Bush tax decreases. It went back to where they were to the Clinton era. And part of even the middle class taxes, I think my payroll tax holiday was eliminated, and my Social Security tax went up to try to extend the Social Security's livelihood. Am I mistaking? Am I doing my math wrong according to my payroll stubs here? Or can you clear that up?
Yeah, the payroll tax holiday was a provision that was put in effect for 2 years, as I recall, to help put more money in consumers' pockets during this the current time of economic weakness to encourage more consumer spending and help the economy recover more quickly. Two points to note. First of all, that change in the payroll tax was always intended just to be temporary, to provide some short-term help for the economy in its current straits. And then, so you're right that your payroll tax did go up this January, back to where it was, two plus years ago. But the second point to keep in mind is that the payroll tax holiday did not harm the financial status of Social Security, because the lost payroll taxes were made up out of through deficit spending, if you will, from the rest of the government budget. So, but it was causing a loss of tax revenue, and again, given our overall government fiscal situation, we couldn't continue to afford to do the payroll tax holiday for more years.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Jim in Osceola. How we characterize the so-called cuts is important. When you say cuts, the average person thinks they're going to get less from what they are getting from Social Security now. It is a reduced rate of increase and not reduction in the present amount a Social Security recipient gets now. In the past few years, the regular CPI formula algorithm would have given a zero increase in Social Security payments that recipients would get. Congress jumped in and gave a Social Security recipient a $250 annual increase.
There was one year when there was an ad hoc increase of that sort. Or an ad hoc payment. I've now forgotten when that occurred. But again, that was designed as part of the, to help strengthen the economy during its current current weakness. But your commenter's general point is correct, that what we're talking about is slightly reducing the amount of the cost of living increases. People will still get cost of living increases in their benefits as inflation rises, but under this proposal, the increase wouldn't be quite as large as it would otherwise be.
Mm-hmm. John in Luck is next. Hi, John.
Good morning. Why, if the purpose for the Consumer Price Index being applied to Social Security is to help protect seniors from the loss of purchasing power over time, why would any change to a change CPI, for example, not reflect the fact that the seniors purchase a different basket of goods and, for example, they purchase more medical care, I suspect? Shouldn't any change try to move towards a better basket of goods and services that they purchase to help protect them against the loss of purchasing power, rather than just to reduce their benefit? That's question number one. And then question number two is, over the long term, say 10 or 15 years, won't the law of averages suggest that the chained benefit cumulative effect and the current benefit CPI cumulative effect move together? Thank you.
Well, those are two excellent questions. To do the first one first, elderly people do consume a different basket of goods and services than consumers at large, and many people have suggested, as you in effect have, that Social Security benefits should be indexed. That the cost of living increase should be computed using a price index which is computed with special reference to the market basket of the elderly. And you're also right that there would be a larger weight on healthcare costs. Those have been growing more rapidly than other costs, and the likelihood is that an index that was specific to the elderly would actually grow a bit more rapidly than the CPI that we're now using. That's one side of the argument. The other side is that, of course, not all Social Security benefits are received by the elderly. You have some young survivors of deceased workers. We have the disabled beneficiaries whom we mentioned earlier. And some people say that we shouldn't try to, tailor cost of living increases to beneficiaries of specific programs, but just use a broad-based index. But you're right, that issue is, is a concern. On your second question as to the long-run effects of the two indexes, the Labor Department, which is produces these different measures, has been producing a chain consumer price index now for quite a while, for 10 or 12 years. And over that long period of time, there has been a consistent difference, which, as I say, is averaged about a quarter of a percentage point per year, so that over the long haul, the two indexes are different. They don't average out to the same thing.
We go to Jean in Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, Kathleen. It sounds like, with all the confusion, and it's almost another example of bad communication by the White House, similar to the health care. What is it? What's going to happen, and what are the effects? So I appreciate your guest explaining things so well. Earlier he made a personal comment that he thinks that tax on income should be raised. I was wondering what he would raise it to.
As I said, what we were talking about was increasing the limit on the amount of earnings that are subject to the Social Security payroll tax. Currently, that limit is somewhere around $113,000 or so a year, and that means that about 85% of overall earnings in the economy are subject to the tax. My personal suggestion would be to raise that limit to, say, around $220,000, at which point it would cover about 90% of earnings in the economy.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. What worries me as I think about this long term is really not the solvency of Social Security. It's the fact that more and more people are going to be relying on this more and more. How many people think about retirement savings? They just don't.
Well, that's a great concern, and ties also into your earlier point about the decline in defined benefit pensions,
mm-hmm.
which makes the need for personal saving through 401k type plans, through individual retirement accounts, even more important. And obviously, especially in the current period of economic difficulties, people who are certainly people who are out of work or who are working less, at fewer hours than they would like, they're all having great difficulties in making ends meet, let alone saving for their retirement. That's definitely a reason to think about keeping Social Security strong and minimizing cuts to benefits. I couldn't agree more.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about Social Security this hour of the program with the president's rather controversial move to change the way, slowly it would diminish the amount of money. It changes the index, and it would give a slower rate of growth to those recipients of Social Security. And there are a lot of Democrats who are upset about who say that Social Security really has not contributed to the budget deficit, and it will be solvent for a number of decades here. So the president has put things on the table before, as Robert Reich, we don't know where he is. He's supposed to be with us, but he's not. He says that the president has thrown things on the table before the Republicans even sat down for dinner. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is Paul Vandewater. He is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He specializes in Medicare, Social Security, and health coverage issues. The number is 800-486-8655. Gene, thank you very much for your call. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, use that and leave your comments. We like to read them. The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we're going to be talking about poetry because this is National Poetry Month. We'll also invite you to share a favorite poem and talk about why poetry is important. Natalie Richardson will join us. She is one of five National Student Poets, which is the country's highest honor for young poets, and she has done some marvelous work in the Chicago area. We'll also be speaking with Jeff Ponievash, who is a Milwaukee-born poet who was recently chosen to be one of the two poets laureate for the Milwaukee Public Library. So we'll have poetry, hour two of our show today. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Paul Vandewater, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, specializing in Medicare, Social Security, and health coverage issues, is our guest. We're not sure what happened to Secretary Reich, so we'll try and book him for some other time. Randy in Keewaskum is our next caller. Paul, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
One thing I haven't heard mentioned, when you're talking the withholding tax, the employee only pays half of the withholding tax. The employer matches it, and when there was a tax holiday, that holiday wasn't for employers. The employer's portion stayed that high. So another thing you have to think about, anytime you raise the limit of what you're taxing on, you're also imposing another tax on business. Now, if you're self-employed, then you pay 100% of it. But employees only pay 50% of the withholding tax. The employer pays the other half.
Paul.
Yes, it's true that nominally that employers and employees each pay a half of the Social Security payroll tax. But putting on my hat as an economist, what I say is that you know, virtually every economist agrees that workers end up, at the end of the day, end up bearing the entire amount of the payroll tax in the form of lower cash compensation, so that you know, it doesn't happen instantly, but if the employer's share of the payroll tax goes up along with the employee's share, that ends up over a few years in reducing the rate of growth of cash compensation as well. So even though I think it's a good idea to raise the cap on the payroll tax contributions, I think in all candor one has to admit that increase would be borne by the both the employer and employee share of that increase would be borne by the high-wage workers themselves.
Thanks, Randy, for the call. Would you agree with people like Robert Reich that Social Security really is solvent for at least the next two decades?
Yes. The annual report of Social Security's trustees, we're going to get an update next month sometime, but the most recent report showed the combined Social Security trust funds, both the retirement and disability funds, as being solvent through 2033, which is exactly two decades from now. Now, one caveat, there are, in fact, two separate funds, one for disability and one for retirement, and the disability fund is projected to run short in just two or three years. So we are facing a more serious issue there, but the expectation is that a large part of that shortfall will simply be resolved by reallocating part of the payroll tax rate away from the retirement program and toward the disability program. And if that were done, again, the combined program would indeed be solvent for about 20 years more.
Roger in Superior, hi.
Hello?
Yes, Roger, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. See,
sure.
I don't know, I just put the program on here about 10 minutes ago. I don't know if anybody mentioned this, but I can't understand why our politicians and the president don't talk more about why doesn't our government talk about paying back the $3 trillion they owe the Social Security that they siphon off for wars or some other useless projects.
Yeah, Roger, we did discuss that a bit a few minutes ago, but happy to go and recap. You're absolutely right that over the past 30 years that Social Security has taken in more in payroll taxes than it's paid out in benefits, and it has accumulated a substantial trust fund. But you needn't worry that that money isn't there. It isn't going to be paid back. That money is invested in U.S. Treasury securities. Those are safe assets. And I don't think, and there's no one that I know of who's talking about not using those assets to pay benefits when that becomes necessary.
We seem to have a problem with trust here, don't we, Paul?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of concern, and that's, you know, it shows how important Social Security is to so many people. People want to make sure that their benefits are secure, and I think people can rest secure that Social Security is going to be with us for the foreseeable future, but there will have to be changes made either on the tax or benefits side or both to make sure that it stays solvent not just for 20 years, but for the long haul.
Let's go to Reed in Clintonville next. Hi, Reed.
Yes, good morning. Say, thanks for this program.
Mm-hmm.
I've only been listening here for about 10 minutes, so I don't know if I will have an answer or have had an answer already. But I would like you then instead perhaps to elaborate on what you said about people being unemployed. Just as an example, I was just speaking with someone, and by the way, I'm a senior citizen, and my supplementary insurance for Medicare, just yesterday I was notified, has increased again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about individuals. I was speaking with someone who made $3,000 last year as an adult male, and they are looking at and here's a 40-year-old man. They are looking at the rest of their lives working at minimal jobs, jobs with minimum wage, or part-time jobs. And here our government wants to, our state government anyway, you know, wants to make adults work at the same wages as high school students, or allow high school students to work greater hours, and taking jobs away from serious family people. And what's going to happen to these people when they reach 65 and 70 years of age, and they're on Medicare, but they can't even afford to pay their Medicare supplementary, and so consequently then they're penalized for that. I'm stunned at the hard, uncompromising mean-spirited approach that is being taken to against people that are indigent or...
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Reed, that the poor job situation is clearly our biggest national problem at this point. And if that's a problem that the Social Security system by itself can't solve, because you're right that if someone doesn't have good earnings during his or her working lifetime,
yes,
he's not going to be able to build up. He or she isn't going to be able to build up the kind of Social Security benefit that would provide even a minimally adequate living in retirement. So we need to deal with the job situation first.
And thank you very much for the call. I am hesitant to take the next caller, but John, we will pass along your message from Madison. We need to teach our children about saving for retirement. And That will be, I think, the subject of an upcoming show. Paul, thank you so much for being with us this hour. It was very informative.
Well, delighted to be with you, Kathleen.
Our guest this hour, Paul Vandewater, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He specializes, as you could tell, in Medicare, Social Security, and health coverage issues. He was also Assistant Deputy Commissioner for Policy at the Social Security Administration. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to Ms. Katie Mattson for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for your many phone calls. If you want to leave more messages, we're interested in what you think about this. Our Facebook page is available for that, as well as gives you information on upcoming shows, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for listening. We'll return poetry the next hour of our show.